What's up, everybody? Welcome to the TNT Wellness and Nutrition Podcast. I'm Thomas.
I'm Tyson. Let's get this started.
Hey, everybody. Welcome back to another episode of TNT Wellness and Nutrition Podcast. This is episode 29, and in this podcast, we're going to be debunking a very popular and prominent protein myth revolving around our body's ability to only absorb 30 grams of protein per meal. So we're going to go into that and why that isn't true. But first, let's do a little check-in. So, Tom, how's your week been?
So this weekend, I took advantage of a couple of the tips of the week that I've been giving out. So one was eat before you go out for meals. So I had the best dinner Friday night. Pork tenderloin, stuffed with garlic sausage, wrapped in bacon.
Yeah, is this from that butcher shop?
Yeah.
That's dope.
Delicious. It was one of the best meals I ever had. So after I ate that delicious meal, I think I ate like 2 pounds of that, went out to a spaghetti feed. It was for a fundraiser for a local wrestling team. I ate a little bit of spaghetti, like, you know, not a whole lot of it. I was pretty full from the meat before. So another tip is don't schedule your own cheat meals. Let life schedule them for you. So, you know, you don't want to have a cheat meal on a Friday and then Saturday you go out for, you know, a spaghetti feed. So took advantage of that. And then after the day after I had that little like carb loading day, scheduled a nice hard workout, ran 12 miles. It was a little hard, but it wasn't that hard.
Because last week, 10 miles like wasn't nothing.
10 miles was like 12 miles felt about the same.
Oh, really?
Yeah. I think I could have done 15 or maybe even like maybe ran for like 3 hours if I really needed to. But who's got that much time in the day?
Yeah, nobody. This was on a treadmill?
This was on a treadmill.
Okay.
It's been raining so much up here. Finally, we got some nice, gorgeous weather. Hopefully, that'll carry on to the weekend. I'm trying to do a long run outside this weekend if I can, but that's
up to the weather. I wonder how much different you'll feel like running on the street.
I don't really want to do too much street running because, like, you have to stop at corners, you have to look out for cars.
Why does that just mean not on a treadmill?
See, I don't know. See, like, because now I have to set my own pace. Like, I definitely need to do more outdoor running, but it's just hard to with the weather.
Oh, for sure.
And one thing that I really do love about the treadmill is I'm like really getting to focus and dial in my technique. So make sure my arms are moving forward and not side to side, wasting energy. And then like I'm really trying to check my head to make sure it's not bouncing up and down, wasting energy, moving vertically instead of just in a straight line forward.
Yeah, when you're running 10 plus miles, that all adds up.
Yeah, definitely. I'm not trying to run like 40 miles when I'm doing a marathon. I'd rather just do that 26, not overwork it.
And what's the end game again? What are you trying to hit?
I just want to complete the marathon.
Okay.
But ideally, like under 4 hours. If I can get better than that, cool. If not, whatever.
Is that good? I have no clue how good what time
I think like the world record's like 2 hours or like right around 2 hours.
Oh, no shit.
But those guys are been running for a really long time.
Yeah.
Like, I don't even think I could keep that pace for, like, 2 laps. Maybe even, I don't even know if I could do that for, like, 1 lap around the track. And they're doing it for 26 miles.
That's impressive.
Yeah, these people are crazy.
Okay. So 4 hours. I like that. That's good.
Yeah, it's a little over 6 hours, or 6 miles per hour.
Okay.
That's a nice little jog.
Well, that's good, man, for that long. I couldn't do that. I know for a fact. So that's impressive.
Yeah, so what's new with you? Still doing that egg yolk only?
Yeah, still doing the egg yolks only. Actually, a great benefit of that is anybody out there eats a shit ton of eggs know that the worst part is peeling the eggs, you know, if you boil them. So now that I only eat the egg yolks, it takes me like 1 second to peel the egg because I literally just rip it open and pull out the yolk. it's like so fast, it's so easy. It makes me never want to eat the whole egg again. But yeah, doing that, I did up my calories a little bit to a dozen eggs a day or just a dozen egg yolks and a little bit more beef just because honestly I was so hungry and it's such a shitty feeling to be hungry, you know what I mean? Like it's not, I'm not trying to die right now, so I was really just like, all right, let me eat a little bit more. So I'm up to 12 and then a little bit over 3.5 pounds of the ground beef, which sounds like a lot, but it's really not, you know what I mean? Like it's really not that much.
What percentage ground beef are you doing?
It's 90-10.
Okay.
Yeah, 90-10. And that should keep the protein elevated and all that stuff. And then still doing the pound and a half of cod. I've decided, when I do decide to cut my calories down in February, I'm just going to dial it down to for the first 4 weeks to ease my way into the cut to 2 pounds of ground beef and 8 egg yolks and keep the cod the same. So that'll average out about 300 grams of protein and 150 grams of fat. And that's where I'll start the cut. And that'll be a pretty decent calorie dip, and it'll still keep my protein elevated. So I'll bet I'll be starving, but...
What are you at now? Like 400 grams of protein?
I forget, but I think it's a little over 400.
Okay.
Yeah, it's how much fat? 400. I said it last week. I forget. Because I really don't. I only looked into it once.
It was like 60-40? Yeah. Is that the ratio you're going for?
No, it was like 55-45.
Okay.
Yeah, so it's almost 50-50. Yeah, I feel good. I finished that book, Tripping Over the Truth, which was awesome. Like, I literally can't recommend that book enough. It's really a great book. And they finally talked about Thomas Seyfried and D'Agostino. Those are guys we know.
So that book just go in, like, chronological order?
Damn near. It started with Otto Warburg, and then went to Peterson, and then ended with these guys. And, yeah, it didn't really mention keto once until, like, the last two chapters, which was a trip. And it started with Seyfried and him, like, kind of stumbling upon Otto Warburg's work and how he was like, oh, this shit doesn't make sense. You know what I mean? He was a geneticist. Like, he got his degree in genetics.
Seyfried?
Yeah.
Okay.
So it makes sense that he saw all this data from the, oh, I'm forgetting what the program was, but how we mapped out the genome. And he was like, and we mapped out the cancerous genomes and all these different genes. And he noticed, like, the intratumoral heterogeneity. So pretty much, like, even within a single tumor, if you pull out different cells, they'll each have separate mutations. And, like, if you don't have a background in genetics, that shit's complicated. And we're talking, like, even smart people, like doctors, obviously, you know what I mean? They couldn't really interpret the data. He did, and he was like, oh, this isn't right. And that made him go down that path of, like, keto, low carb, all that stuff. Yeah, it makes me just thank God we started keto now and low carb now. Like, we started in our 20s, so hopefully any damage that was done is hopefully healing, you know? It really went into... You remember D'Agostino talking about the hyperbaric chambers and oxygen therapy, stuff like that?
Yeah, because if you're either burning off of just sugar and glutamine, you're not using oxygen with that. So, like, the rest of your cells that are still using fat oxidation, mm-hmm. they need oxygen. So you're creating a perfect environment for your healthy cells to thrive.
Yeah, with the ketones and all that oxygen. So, yeah, they talked about that, like the increased oxygen therapy inducing apoptosis in the cancerous cells because the trigger being, like, the buildup of free radicals. And so, and obviously, reactive oxygen species, the key ingredient there, the key word being oxygen. So that whole therapy with him and Seyfried, like, they talked about some of the studies with how it cured cancer and, like, really helped people. And it was, like, it was crazy. Like, this is the shit we should have been doing for the last 100 years. What do you call it? Hyperbaric tanks? That's not, like, fancy equipment. That's a pressurized tube. You know what I mean?
Oh, yeah. It's really easy to do.
Yeah. We could do that shit.
Yeah.
But, yeah. Then it went into a little bit, like, even Crick. You know the guys who discovered the double helix?
I don't know a lot about that.
No? Watson and Crick, whatever.
High school or, like, early college stuff. Yeah.
So they got the Nobel Prize for discovering the double helix of DNA. And so, obviously, this guy really cares about genes, and his whole life revolved around the genome. But even towards the end of his life, he was like, yo, this cancer shit's not working out. So he changed his opinion to lean towards the metabolic theory of cancer. And like, his big article, one of the last ones he wrote, was about antioxidants and the role those play in just programmed cell suicide. And I don't know, just a great book. And that's all it's been new with me, really, just doing that, still training. I haven't even touched that other book, the Power of Sex and Suicide book. I don't even know if I'm going to finish it. I think I'm done.
It's just too dull?
Oh, God, it's stupid, man. Like, it's too... Like, I don't consider myself a very dumb person, but, man, I read this book and it makes me feel stupid, you know? So, and I think it's partly because it is dense material and partly because I'm not interested in it.
Well, is there anything, like, you can apply to your life? Are there any, like, good takeaways?
Not yet.
Okay.
No.
That's what I need. Like, if you can tell me why this matters to me, then I can read it. But, like, yeah. If I can't apply that knowledge in any way, then it's like, what's the point?
Yeah. And at the end of the day, it's going to be take care of your mitochondria. Like, I already know that. I haven't gotten even that section in the book yet, but that's what it's going to be. And that's how we live our life. Either knowingly or unknowingly, we're doing things that make our mitochondria healthy.
So you could probably just read two other books on something completely unrelated and gain a lot more knowledge than learning maybe a couple more things.
A little tips. Yeah. I know. But yeah, so that's been my week. I guess we can go into this myth now about protein intake.
Yeah, so both of us worked at GNC back in the day when we were like in high school, like right out of high school. So we were fed a bunch of garbage information back then. And then we passed that on to lots of the other people. I was a personal trainer back in the day too. I feel kind of bad. Just gave them all this garbage information. But then when I went to college, I relearned the same garbage information. So it's a really common myth.
It is. And something actually we talked about before we even started this podcast is the information we're about to present, if we were to talk to like a professor at either my school or his school, they would argue with us.
Yeah, and it just doesn't make any logical sense. Like, just from a common sense standpoint, like, you don't really need to think about this, all the science behind it. It's like, just from a common sense standpoint, it doesn't make any sense. So, like, that the myth that we're talking about is that you can only absorb 30 grams of protein per meal. So if you're eating, I don't know, one meal a day, that means you can only get 30 grams of protein in your entire day. I eat one meal a day. I'm gaining muscle, and I'm doing all sorts of crazy endurance types of activities. If I was only able to get 30 grams of protein, I'd be shriveling up and having no energy.
Yeah. I mean, one of the, just like you said, common sense, if you just, a lot of our arguments are ancestral based. So you just go back through history and like, what did our ancestors do? Because that's obviously a lot of time we were doing these things. And do you think our ancestors, like, were sitting around a fire, measuring out maybe like 7 ounces of beef, eating it, like, all right, boys, you know, I'm good. I got my 30 grams. Let's do this again in 4 hours. Like, no, it didn't happen. They would eat until they were full, and then they wouldn't eat again until they were hungry again. And that could be upwards of 10 pounds on some societies out there. So they would always eat way more than 30 grams of protein, and they definitely absorb more than 30 grams.
Yeah, if you were only able to absorb 30 grams, like, I mean, we talked about this in our intermittent fasting podcast. Like, so there's sunlight only limited amounts of time during the day. So that means that you could probably only get 3 meals a day. And that's if you're eating your first meal at the crack of dawn, you eat another one like midday, and then you're eating another one at sunset. You're only able to get 3 meals a day in. So 120 grams of protein, that's a lot for some people.
That's 90 grams.
Three times three, yeah. Sorry, my math is a little off.
Yeah.
Yeah, 90 grams is enough for some people, but not if you're going to be super active and you need to be big and strong. Yeah, that just doesn't make any logical sense.
And just think back in the day, being big and strong was that advantage.
Yeah, you would need all the strength you could get. And then also, what happens if you don't have meat the next day? That 90 grams of protein your one day is supposed to last you 3 days. I hate that I never, like, questioned any of this material back then.
Yeah, me too. Because it's just, like, it doesn't take that much critical thinking to poke holes in this.
Yeah, so it's like two questions, like, right there. We just kind of just destroy that myth. How is that even possible?
It's not even possible. Yeah, exactly. One of the examples I pulled up looking or doing research for this podcast was looking into the Mongols a little bit. And if you know anything about Genghis Khan, back in the day, he damn near took over the known world. And I mean, I look at him as kind of like a gangster, kind of like a cool guy. But I'm sure if he was coming over the hill with a bunch of horses and he was coming to your village, you'd be like, fuck that guy, because he would just come and pretty much kill you and take your women.
I mean, he was definitely evil and did a lot of bad things.
Yeah.
But he was able to accomplish so much that you have to kind of respect that about him.
Yeah, yeah. It's a weird, it's kind of like a yin and yang thing. Like, he was not a good guy, but man, he was innovative and obviously knew what he was doing from a conqueror standpoint. But the Mongols were said to eat upwards of 10 pounds a day of lamb. Mutton was their big, like, kind of meat of choice. So I got a little quote here. So the gluttony of, this is someone talking about the Mongols. The gluttony of this people exceeds all description. A Mongol will eat more than 10 pounds of meat at one sitting, but some have been known to devour an average-sized sheep in 24 hours. On a journey when provisions are economized, a leg of mutton is an ordinary daily ration for one man, and although he can live for days without food, yet when once he gets it, he will eat enough for 7. What does that sound like for you?
I mean, it looks like he's just going on a buffet every day.
Well, it sounds like something we talk about with feasting and fasting. So what were these guys? They were keto guys.
Oh, for sure.
100%. Like, that was their advantage. They damn near took over the world, and their main, well, they were killers, of course, but their advantage came from a dietary standpoint. They had more energy. Just think they could go. Something that came up again, I didn't pull up the whole quote, but usually when Army back in the day would set camp, there would be like 100 campfires, right? The whole cooking food, all they would, most of these like Romans and shit, they'd eat like wheat and just shit food, okay? The Mongols didn't have to eat. So they can set up camp with maybe like one fire, and it was kind of like deceptive towards the enemy. They're like, oh, there's not that many of them out there. There's only one campfire. Then they come the next morning, there's 10,000 motherfuckers coming over the hill. You know, because they didn't have to eat every day because they were on a keto diet. So we like, we don't have to eat. We're fine. They weren't a slave to food.
And also with that, with like a high protein diet, I mean, not from like a ratio standpoint, but they're eating a lot of protein. One thing that happens with that is a thermogenic effect of protein. So you don't really need those campfires to keep you warm. I'm sweating all the time.
Yes.
So right now it's like 40 degrees, 50 degrees. I go on walks with my dogs wearing shorts and a tank top. And I still will break a sweat if I go on like a little jog with them.
100%.
People look at me like I'm fucking crazy. Like, aren't you freezing? It's like, yeah. No, aren't you hot? You're wearing like a beanie. You got like a jacket. You look like you're ready to go to the snow.
Yeah, no, that's, I guess I know a little about meat sweats too. That's a term actually used for is meat sweats. And I always train early in the morning. And right now it's fairly cold. It's wintertime. So after that, I go to the store. I get all my meats and stuff like that. And I never wear a jacket. Because my post-workout meal is usually, I don't know, 150 grams of protein. And I always feel like I'm going to sweat at the drop of a dime. Like, if I think too hard, I'm going to break a sweat. You know what I mean? Like, it's just, that's how it feels. And that all revolves around, like you said, the thermic effect of protein. And protein's ability to generate hydrogen ions in that inner mitochondrial membrane. If you talked about anything, or you remember anything about, like, the electron transport chain, protein's ability to donate hydrogen to that system is through the roof. And when those hydrogen ions back up, they can flow down, they can do something, they flow down uncoupling proteins, and those generate heat. So that's one of the reasons why protein is so good at generating heat.
Yeah, another benefit to it, we did a whole podcast on like why the carnivore diet is great for athletes. So all your enzymes are proteins. A lot of like building blocks for energy are amino acids. There's so many supplements out there for athletes that are just amino acids. So if you're eating meat all the time, high quality meats like these people were doing, you're going to be absorbing, maybe not all that protein is going to building muscle, but now you have more enzymes, now you have more other benefits with all these amino acids. That amino acid pool that you have in your body is going to be full pretty much all the time.
Yeah. Again, looking into this podcast, anyone who's watched Pumping Iron, anyone out there who's a bodybuilding fan, they know the name Serge Nubret. So he was a guy who took second to Arnold Schwarzenegger, I think it was the 1975 Mr. Olympia. And you can just Google Serge Nubret. Dude was jacked, huge. And I didn't know, but his diet mainly revolved around meat. He would eat, they say, upwards of 8 pounds a day of either horse or beef. And he built a ton of muscle.
He's eating horse?
Horse, yeah. I don't know how the hell he got horse.
I mean, those seem like pretty lean animals, and they seem like valuable animals, too.
That you would eat.
Yeah.
I know.
I've never looked at a horse and like, ooh, they look delicious, because they're usually pretty ripped.
Yeah. He was, I think he was Caribbean, so I don't know. Maybe it's a thing down there. I'm not sure. But, I mean, just from 6 to 10 pounds of meat is hundreds and hundreds of grams of protein a day, and obviously that guy was absorbing all of it, because he was huge. I mean, was he on a ton of steroids? Yeah. But still, he was absorbing that protein.
Yeah, and like you can use that protein for many, many different tools. You don't need to just, it's not all going to be building your muscles, but you're going to be, your protein synthesis is going to be at the max. Like the limiting factor is not going to be enough protein. Now you have all these enzymes too that protein gets converted into. Yeah, you're like everything, there is going to be like no limiting factor.
No.
Your body's going to be fully optimized. Whatever's left over is going to go to those meat sweats that we were just talking about.
Exactly, yeah. And just, again, this is just a little bit of critical thinking. And it might be a little like TMI, a little too much information. But things we put into our body, into our mouth, into our GI tract, eventually they have to come out, right? Whatever you don't absorb will come out the other end. If someone, I know I notice this, or I guess every day now for me, on the carnivore diet where I only eat meat, my stool size has dramatically decreased. I mean, Lord knows I eat enough meat, right? Right now, it's around like 5 pounds a day or so with a dozen eggs. And literally, when I go to the bathroom, there's nothing there.
Yeah, honestly.
Like, so if I didn't absorb it, it would come out the other end. It's simple. It's like, it's math. It's 1 + 1.
I noticed the same thing with my dogs, too. Because they're mostly carnivores. I give them organ meats and fatty cuts of meat. I feed them from my plate, only the meat. So they eat pretty good. And once I switched them over from that, even when they were having some vegetables with their meals, like, yeah, I noticed a noticeable decrease in their stool size. And yeah, I've noticed the same thing. I mean, a lot of that's just you're absorbing everything. You don't have that fiber just going through your body.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, normally what comes out the other end when someone's eating a more, I guess, omnivorous style diet is a fiber, and our body simply doesn't absorb that. So if you're eating vegetables or even something like a sweet potato, some of that fiber is just going to go right through you, and that increases bulk, so it increases stool size. So that's the shit you can't absorb. So if you want to talk about only absorbing 30 grams of something, talk about fiber. It's not about protein.
Yeah, I never really understood the whole fiber argument. I mean, I guess, like, you can convert some of it into fatty acids, but it just seems like, why don't you just eat the fatty acids? It just seems like a much more logical thing to do.
Oh, it is. It's way more efficient, too. But, yeah, I remember, I'm sure people out there who are listening know that the narrative behind fiber is, if you are constipated, eat more fiber. I remember when I told you this, I was like, yeah, you know, people cut off fiber, oh, don't do that, you're gonna get backed up. You're like, that doesn't make no sense.
Oh yeah,
you didn't even believe me. And I was like, yeah, that's the narrative.
It's basically like, if you have a traffic jam, you're not gonna add more cars that think that's gonna solve the problem. Like, that's the most idiotic thing you could possibly do.
But that's what the narrative is.
Yeah,
that's what it is. Yeah, I know, that shit makes no sense either.
If you want a natural, healthy way to do it, magnesium is a great way to get things moving.
It is.
Vitamin C is another way to get things moving, but generally most natural sources of vitamin C are going to be high in sugar, so magnesium is a much better source. Mm-hmm.
But yeah, just go down to the absorption rate of meat. Meat is usually at least 90% absorbed. So there are certain parts of meat that we can't absorb, more of like the collagen side of it and the more like connective tissues. Some of that can get fermented in our large intestines, again, to ferment into short chain fatty acids, just like fiber. But most of the stuff that does come out the other end when you eat meat are those like connective tissues that we just didn't break down. But the vast majority of what you eat gets absorbed and turned into protein and fat that our body can use and rebuild.
Our bodies aren't dumb. If it knows that it's only going to get one meal a day, that transit time is going to be much slower. It's just going to push stuff around much slower instead of just trying to rush it through because it has another meal coming in. It doesn't make any sense that our body's just going to, oh, hey, let me just dump this whole meal because I know I have another meal coming in. Like, that absorption rate's going to be fine, and you'll just move slower throughout the body, throughout your digestive tract. We have a very, very long digestive tract.
Very long digestive tract, yeah.
Especially the small intestine. It's incredibly long.
Yeah, I think it's around, like, 23 feet or something like that. And I know what comes up was one of the arguments against protein is the nitrogen. So people, I mean, well, it's true that nitrogen is toxic in our body. There's no doubt about it. It'd be like, oh, if you eat, you know, 200 grams of protein a day, that's 200 grams of nitrogen. That's a lot for your body to handle. But our body, again, is smart. So that's what when we eat these high protein meals, say we eat a meal with 100 grams of protein, our body will just slow down digestion. And the rate limiting step will be something called the urea cycle. And that's our body's ability to metabolize nitrogen and turn ammonia into urea and just excrete it through the kidneys. So your body will never pull in too much nitrogen because it's not stupid. It pulls in as much nitrogen as it needs, and then it metabolizes it. Then when it's done, it pulls in more protein. And it has, again, 23 feet of small intestines to do that. It takes about 6 or 8 hours. So over that course of time, your body will absorb all that protein and utilize it in whichever way it needs to. If it needs to build muscle, it will. Produce enzymes, it will. Or just generate body heat, it will. And actually, something I didn't mention, the whole warm-blooded creature thing. Did you know that that's why we're warm-blooded creatures? Because the uncoupling proteins in mitochondria?
I did not. I never even thought about that.
Yeah, so there's a difference between, obviously, like a warm-blooded creature, think like a crocodile, and then us. I mean, excuse me, a cold-blooded creature, like a crocodile, and us are warm-blooded. So a crocodile... That's why you see people fuck with crocodiles, like, on, like, YouTube videos. They kind of, like, throw meat in their face and have them bite. Because they need to build up heat. So, if a crocodile's cold, it's not going to be moving very fast. You got to let it kind of warm up. Think of it like an old car on a winter day. Okay? Like, it's not... If you hit the floor right away, shit's going to fall apart. we're warm-blooded creatures because back in the day, obviously on a meat-based diet, that protein generated hydrogen ions, again, in the inner mitochondrial membrane. They went down those uncoupling proteins, generating heat. So now we're warm-blooded creatures. We're like a Ferrari. We can get things started right away, no matter what's going on. We can wake me up in the middle of the night. If someone robs my house, I'm dead asleep. I can get up like that, and I'm ready to go because we're warm-blooded creatures. It made us more opportunistic. If we needed to hunt right away, we could. If something came up and we could take advantage of it, we could. So being warm-blooded is definitely an advantage. And that high-protein diet assisted in us evolving that adaptation.
And just touching on something that we were just talking about, just like how many uses protein's for, pretty much our body, like almost every structure is made of protein. Like our bones are mostly protein. Muscles are protein. Like the organelles are proteins. Enzymes are proteins. I don't even know how long this list would go on if we just discussed
how... Oh, it's long.
Yeah. So like everything is made of proteins. So you want to be making sure you're getting them from a high quality source. And our bodies aren't dumb to just have a limiting amount that we can only absorb 30 grams at a meal. That just is so idiotic.
Yeah, it is. Yeah, there's nothing true about that. Feel free to eat as much as you can. And don't worry about the nitrogen. The body will handle that load. Turn it into urea, which is completely inert. It will not hurt your body. And then get rid of it. It's not going to hurt your kidneys. It's not going to all turn into sugar. Nothing like that. And we are going to cover both those myths within the next few weeks. We'll talk about protein and sugar. We'll talk about protein in the kidneys and debunk those as well.
Well, isn't there more nitrogen in quote-unquote protein-rich plants? Stuff like beans? Aren't those like chock full of nitrogen?
That's nitrogen for nitrogen's sake. It is, 100%. Yeah. So, I mean, again, I feel like I'm the only person talking about true protein and crude protein, but something like a legume, think of a bean, is a nitrogen fixer. So it can pull nitrogen out of the air and dump it into the ground. So when you eat beans, and on the back of the label it says it has, whatever, 10 grams of protein per serving, what it's really measuring is just the nitrogen content. It's not even measuring the amino acid content. So why would you want just a shit ton of nitrogen in your GI tract? Now, your body's not going to absorb it. Like we said, it's only going to absorb what it needs. But nitrogen for nitrogen's sake makes no sense. So yeah, the absorption of protein is slow over the course of hours, not that fast. So this gives our body the proper amount of time to digest the food properly and manage the byproducts of that metabolism. I genuinely think like the extra energy that we both received on the carnivorous diet is due to the protein oxidation leading to increased citric acid cycle intermediates. And then that just promotes movement. I mean, you talked about that when you went carnivore. You just had so much energy.
Yeah, I still have crazy amounts of energy.
Yeah. And what do we say? Like, there's two differences and, well, I mean, two basically differences on the carnivore diet is increased protein and decreased anti-nutrients. So I'm thinking that extra energy has to come from the protein and just that being oxidized into citric acid cycle intermediates and then fed through the ATP system and producing energy.
Yeah, not to mention, if you're doing a carnivore diet right, it should be really high in fat. So your body's producing a lot of ketones as well.
Yeah.
So you have a lot of... like ketones is almost like an unlimited fuel source for your body. So like, I don't really know what the limiting factor is going to be when it comes to you running out of energy. You have so many things like stacking up in your favor for energy production. That's just kind of crazy.
Yeah. You have this protein being dripped into your blood supply over hours, just giving you constant energy. And then whenever you actually need to do something big, you have a huge supply of fat to support that movement. I don't care if you're running 100 miles. We have enough fat to make that happen.
Yeah, we're going to talk about this, I think, next week. But your body can also convert those amino acids into glucose when it needs to. So, yes, you do. Your body does need glucose. Certain tissues do need glucose to live. But your body can use that from the protein.
Yep.
Just converts it.
Yeah, something about that narrative really bugs me. That, like, people think when proteins turn into anything besides muscle, it's a waste. I hate that. That's such a limited view of what protein is really designed for.
Well, this is one benefit that I actually learned from school is like the list of what protein makes up in our body fills up like an entire page. And like we're just scratching the surface on that. Like the uses of protein are incredible. Like there's just so many that we use our protein for.
Yeah.
So like when we consume fat, there's a lot of vitamins in fat and there's a lot of stored energy in fat. Carbohydrates is basically just energy. But protein, like that's what actually, like the food that makes the new tissues in our body, that's protein. Like all the new, like the food that becomes you is all protein.
And just, yeah, touching on carbs being just energy, I mean, it's a blessing and a curse. And you know if you're out there and you're a hyper athlete when and when you don't need carbs. But for the average person, if you have a like a typical lunch, say a sandwich and a bag of chips or whatever, that's going to be about 100 grams of carbohydrates. That's all going to get dumped into your blood within 30 minutes to an hour. That's when peak like blood sugar occurs. You better be mobilizing all that energy because you're only going to get that energy in that short window. So that's a quick energy burst. And if you don't use it, you're going to lose it. Your body's going to store it either as glycogen or as fat. You're not going to be able to use it. And that's why the benefit of protein is it dribbles these amino acids into your blood supply. And your body will take a snapshot every second. Where does the body need these amino acids? What can I do with them? And if it's build muscle, that's what it's doing. If it's providing energy, that's what it's doing. People, like, you can't store amino acids in our body. Something you'll hear something about the amino acid pool a lot. And people will misinterpret that like that's some sort of location, like a gallbladder or something like that. But it's not. It's just all the amino acids in our blood supply at any given time. And our body will, like I said earlier, take a snapshot. What does it need right now? Does it need glutamine in the liver? Okay, cool. That's where the glutamine is going. But if it doesn't, that glutamine gets broken down and excreted. It's constantly seeing where do we need this protein? What can I do with it? And again, there's a million views and a million places it can go. And that's why this slow drip of amino acids into our blood supply from a high meat diet or just a high protein meal is ideal to sustain our body and just keep us running healthy. So yeah, I think where they get this 30 gram number is really revolves around muscle protein synthesis. So there's something called a leucine trigger when it comes to muscle protein synthesis. And in humans, it takes about 3 grams of leucine to trigger it. And for most meat-based products, whey protein is a little bit higher, but something like a steak, it's going to be about 10% leucine. So in a 30-gram sample of protein from meat, 3 grams will be leucine, and that triggers muscle protein synthesis. And then they say those amino acids are used for muscle protein synthesis, and then everything else is just oxidized and wasted. And I'm pretty sure that's where they get the 30 grams from.
So yeah, you can eat one meal a day, have 200 grams of protein in that one meal a day, and you'll still be fine. Your body will still be going undergoing protein, muscle protein synthesis all the time. Damn, that's a tongue twister.
It is a tongue twister, yeah. Muscle protein synthesis, yeah. So yeah, so just think your post-workout meal is high in protein, so you're going to stimulate muscle protein synthesis. So the bulk of those amino acids are going to have a role to do. So our body can't store amino acids, like I said, so it's always looking for somewhere to go. So let's say on an arm day, you know, you broke down your bicep. Your bicep is going to be sending the signal, hey, please repair me. Yo, I need amino acids. Repair me so I can get bigger and stronger, get some gains. All right, that's a signal your bicep's going to be sending to your body. So a lot of that protein you eat is going to be go there. However, the protein that doesn't get used there or elsewhere in the body, again, that'll just get dumped into the TCA cycle and then burned for energy.
And another thing that happens with weight training is usually your bone density will increase as well. And that's a good thing because if you're going to be squatting 300, 400 pounds, putting that much weight on your back, you want your bone density to increase as well. And bones are mostly made out of protein.
Yeah, our bones are not just like chalk.
Yeah, everybody thinks like, oh, it's just calcium.
Yeah.
But no, there's a lot more to it than that. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, over half of it is a collagen peptide buildup. So that's really where the strength of our bone comes from protein. So our bones are a great protein sink.
Our connective tissues as well. Like those need to get stronger too. But those are proteins.
Yeah, so much more to it than just building muscle.
Yeah, you don't want your bicep to increase in size and that tendon to stay small. You need those tendons to increase in size too, so they don't just tear when you're trying to curl some 50s.
Yeah, exactly, because that will happen. God, Lord knows, I tore my left bicep a while back. God, it's embarrassing. I tore it doing a pull-up, so keep that shit to yourself. It's funny, now my left bicep is so much more peak than my right, because that's the one I tore. It's like way shorter. Yeah, that's great.
So it's kind of a good thing?
From a visual standpoint, it's a good thing. But if you see them both, it's like, it's pretty obvious. So yeah, I think that's, I think we put that to rest. And when anyone tells you only need 30 grams of protein, don't listen to them. Get your protein in for the day. Don't worry about it. If you're a healthy individual, young male working out, young girl working out, anybody actually, don't fear protein.
Yeah, your body just has so many uses for it. So even if your muscles can only absorb that much, that's fine, because you have so many other uses for protein. It's like the list is just endless.
Yeah, if someone says like, oh, that protein just gets oxidized, be like, good. You know what I mean? Because that means that protein is being used somewhere. So when something like tryptophan gets oxidized, it can get turned into serotonin, which is the neurotransmitter responsible for us feeling happy and content. Or it can get converted into acetyl-CoA and turned into a ketone body, pyruvate, or turned into glucose and ran through the TCA cycle to produce energy. Since protein is both glucogenic and ketogenic, meaning it can produce glucose and ketones. So protein is so versatile. Like, I'm so sick of the narrative that oxidizing protein is a waste. Oxidizing protein is an opportunity for our body to take a snapshot of what it needs at that moment and then fill that void.
So one thing that we didn't mention, but it's very important for you to be able to break down all this protein, is you need to have enough stomach acid. And this happens when we age, is that we don't produce enough stomach acid. So if you're one of those people that isn't digesting your protein, you know, you after a big protein meal, you'll have some digestive issues, stomach ache, maybe something along those lines. Maybe you should think about supplementing with like a HCL supplement.
Yeah, that's actually a great point. That is. So the production of HCL is a very energy intensive process. It does take a lot of magnesium. And as we age, just our society in general, a lot of us are magnesium deficient. So if you feel really full or really bloated after a high protein meal, think about supplementing with HCL or adding some sort of magnesium supplement into your regimen. And don't let that deter you. Your body will get better at digesting protein over time. If you keep giving it the same signal, it will respond better. Like I said earlier, the urea cycle is like the limiting step. That is a step that our body will slow down digestion. It will slow gastric emptying. It will slow down just movement, like peristalsis through our small intestines. And that'll make you feel backed up. That'll make you feel full. Someone like me, I eat so much meat. I'll eat a pound of meat and then within an hour, I'll be ready to go. Because my body is so efficient at breaking it down. So get a good amount of protein in. If you're feeling full, just push through. Eventually your body will respond.
Yeah, many people have it backwards. Like, so if you do have like a big steak and you're not used to eating it, maybe you'll get heartburn and people are thinking, oh, I got too much stomach acid. It's actually the opposite. It's that meat is staying in your stomach for too long. And then some of it will actually end up coming up into your esophagus instead of emptying into the small intestine fast enough. And that's what's causing the heartburn. It's because you don't produce enough of it to break down that protein. So a lot of people will take some sort of antacid, some bicarbonate to even neutralize that acid more. Instead of making the situation better, you're actually making it worse.
Oh God, I hate Tums. I'm the only guy who hates Tums, man. Tums are the worst because all you're doing is treating the symptom. You're actually not treating the root cause of the condition. I mean, you see it all the time, man. People go to the hospital on a Monday. They get fed a bunch of pills, a bunch of IVs, antibiotics, whatever. They leave on Friday. And then guess what? They're back again on Monday because no one's actually treating the cause of this shit. They're just treating the symptoms. So if you want to treat the real cause, you want to, again, supplement with HCL. Maybe think about supplementing with magnesium. And don't blame stomach acid for a problem it didn't cause.
You're just throwing a quick little Band-Aid on the situation, not really doing anything long-term to fix a situation.
Exactly.
So, yeah, I think we covered this myth pretty well.
Yeah, that's enough. Eat the protein. Don't fear it.
Yeah, and if you are one of those people that does have problems producing enough HCL, then just break up your protein between like two meals instead of just one giant meal.
Exactly. Yeah. And you can reach out to us if you have any like questions or concerns or you want like a little bit of a regimen down. We can help you with that.
All right. So are we ready for the tip of the week?
Yeah. What's it this week?
All right. So this one is about how light is affecting your sleep. So in a natural world, we would sleep anywhere from 8 to 12 hours a night, maybe even more during wintertime, just because, hey, once it gets dark, we get tired. But unfortunately, we don't live in a natural world anymore. We can thank Thomas Edison for that. He invented light bulbs, and now it's daytime 24/7, or at least you can make it that way.
And I'm pretty sure that guy sucked, by the way, Thomas Edison.
I mean, like, hey, lighting is great. There's a lot of good uses for lights, but we don't need lights all the time. And one of the most damaging type of lights is blue light. And that's coming from like TVs, computer screens, cell phones, all these type of things. And it's just really confusing our body. It's throwing off the natural hormones that lighting will produce. So ideally, we want our cortisol levels to be high during the day and low at night. So in order to get your cortisol levels high, like just waking up will increase your cortisol levels. And then also we want to make sure that we get some natural sunlight. That natural sunlight will increase serotonin. serotonin turns into melatonin. Melatonin is what keeps you at sleep at night. So you want melatonin. Like, all this stuff is connected. But if you have these at in the wrong time, if your cortisol is high at night, it's going to be hard for you to go to sleep. And then you also might wake up in the middle of the night too. And if you're not getting enough serotonin during the day, you're not going to be able to produce enough melatonin at night. So it'll be hard to get into that deep sleep. So even if you do get 8 hours of sleep, if you're not getting into that deep sleep, you're not really getting any quality sleep. So like a good way, I know I do this, I know you do this as well, is my cell phone has nighttime mode. I have it set so once the sun sets, it goes to nighttime mode. My computer is the same way. As soon as it gets dark outside, the lighting in my house is limited to just what I need. So yeah, maybe I'm eating dinner at nighttime, but I just have one little light on. I don't have the brightest lights in my house on. I don't need it to look like it's noon on a Sunday, you know?
Yeah, just light enough to see your meal.
Yeah, exactly. Just so you can see what you're eating. That's about it. My TV, I have it at the darkest setting possible. Another way you can even do it is you can get blue light blockers. Maybe you don't want to wear these in public. You look a little weird. But if you're just in the privacy of your own home, who cares?
Who cares?
Yeah. And just, yeah, like I said, getting sunlight. Sunlight is key. Even on a cloudy day, that sunlight is 10 times brighter than just natural lighting. And on a sunny day, it's 100 times brighter than natural sunlight. So that's going to have a much bigger impact on that serotonin production. And wearing sunglasses, yeah, you might look cool wearing those sunglasses, but you're not getting those signals to produce enough serotonin because you're tricking your body into thinking it's much darker. So there's, yeah, just get some natural lighting, especially that sunshine. Get as much of it as you can during the day. I mean, don't get sunburnt 24/7. Like, that's a bad idea. But, it's, you know, once you start getting a little warm, go inside. Especially during wintertime, because you're not able to get that sunshine all the time. So just try to get as much as you can. Produce that serotonin, turns into melatonin, gives you that nice, great sleep.
Yeah, and that actually ties right back into our previous topic. How do our body make serotonin? From tryptophan, which is an amino acid. So if you want to sleep good, do all those things, eat a steak, you'll be good to go. So yeah, that's another episode in the books. Thank you for listening. You can find us online at tntwellnessandnutrition.com. We're on all social media platforms, so Twitter, Facebook, Instagram. If you have any questions or concerns, reach out. We're on iTunes, Google Play Music, and SoundCloud.
Yeah, please rate and subscribe. We love all the feedback we can get. We'll probably be doing another Q&A too, so please submit any questions and we'll try to answer those to the best of our ability. Hope everybody has a happy and healthy week.